The next case on our calendar is 09-933, Julie Volbers Cleric versus Middletown Management, Inc. Mr. Ignazi.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors, may it please the court. This case, by the way, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
This case is a quite interesting case. It's about an individual's cause of action, their ability to recover from fraudulent, undeceptive practices. My client, as you can imagine, in a hotel, and we're talking about a Hampton Inn down in Butler County, and I don't recall exactly how many, it's a 100 to 150 room type hotel. But obviously we have lots of Ohio citizens as well as citizens from other states who would stay in the hotel on their way to and from to visit family. In my case, to visit Kings Island, which is somewhat nearby. And what this case is about and begs the question is, can a hotel charge fake, non-existent, fictitious items on their bill, call it a tax, and in this case we know for years they charge 6%, and basically get away with it.
Is this a class action?
It is a class action.
And I believe I read somewhere that one of the things objected to all along the way is that a specific receipt or bill for your named client was never put into the record. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was never put in the record because of the procedural framework of the case. There are lots of bills, and we've never had any discovery. This whole entire case is based on a 12B6 motion, which I think is also part of the problem, with the trial court pointing out that there's no documentary evidence because I didn't have any ability whatsoever to conduct any discovery, to put any affidavits in, to do anything. There are documents, there are things, but none of that's in the record because we didn't have the opportunity to.
So you filed a class action lawsuit. Was there ever any claim filed either with the city or the county to retrieve the taxes?
No, there was not.
Okay.
Well, they didn't pay any taxes, right?
The defendant hotel did not pay taxes. There was no tax to pay. And I don't believe that the taxing authority, in this case, the city of Fairfield and the county of Butler, had no authorization to tax. They had no tax enacted to go and collect.
And there's no refund mechanism that they have in place to refund improperly collected taxes because they've never imposed the tax.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct. And and that was noted by the appellate court in their decision. They did the research, and there was no mechanism or form or anything like that to even do that.
So is the collection of money by the Hampton Hotel, which they call a tax, is it in fact a tax, or is it just an extra charge that they've put on those who have visited guests of their hotel, which they call a tax, which really isn't a tax?
I think that's said very well. They're calling it a tax.
That was a question.
Well, but that's what they did, and that they called it a tax, and it's not really a tax. It's a fake, non-existent tax.
Counsel, perhaps you could help clarify something for me, because I hear the argument that it was not a tax, but then there's also something in the briefs that now there is a tax, or later there is a tax, but it's not at the same rate. So could you help clarify, is there or is there not a tax, and is it higher, or charging a higher rate, lower rate, or is it changed during the course here, or what?
Good question. The hotel in question opened for business in the summer of 1999. The tax was not enacted by the county until 2003, some 4 years later. And then there is a difference in the rate at that time. The tax that they enacted and the tax that they were collecting, which all goes back to there is no tax. There was no tax. They were just collecting this money, 6% off of people for years.
And your complaint is only focused on that period of time before the local authorities did enact a tax?
Actually, it's focused on both. It's focused for the 4 years that there was zero tax, and then it's focused from 2003 through 2007 for the difference in fraudulent taxes. It covers both.
Why would perhaps not a different rule obtain for the different points in time when there was no tax, and then when there was a tax, but it was an over-collection of tax?
Well, in this case, when you look at the statutory framework, and I think that's laid out in the briefs, there are sales taxes and there are excise tax. A sales tax is a type of excise tax. And it's made very clear in the record, there's a state sales tax and there's like 57 or 50, all these different exceptions. And it's laid out very well, it's regulated very well, and administered throughout the state. It's 5.5%, we all know that. But with respect to county or municipal taxes, that is not the case. It is a different tax, and it's an excise tax. And in this particular case, you're asking if there should be two different rules, one for whether there was a fake tax and they were just collecting and defrauding people, and then a second where they over-collected it. Should there be a different rule?
Your complaint doesn't seem to break it down that way. I had the same question Justice Cupp did. I'm trying to figure out exactly what's the issue here. And from your complaint, do you think your complaint makes that clear? I mean, it was dismissed for failure to state a cause of action. It seems to me if the taxing authorities receive some tax, and more than they should have, or receive some tax, then your claim is against the taxing authority, is it not? But if the patrons received a bill that said excise tax to Sharon Township or whatever, and Sharon Township had no excise tax, that would then be your fraud claim, I guess, which would not be a, which you wouldn't, from which you would not recover at the, from the taxing authority. Do you think your complaint makes that clear?
I think the complaint, it does state that the, and the appellate court noted when, like in 2003, a tax was enacted, and before that there wasn't. But that's part of the problem with the 12b-6. I mean, this is a, and it's probably a lot of the cases that they relied on too, the appellate court and the trial court. They relied on this, on the Parker case and the Bergmoser case. Both of those cases are not this case. Both of those cases, number one, they dealt with state sales tax. This does not deal with that at all. Number two, both of those cases did not involve Consumer Sales Practices Act claims. And they also did not involve fraud claims. And that's particularly significant in this case because we have alleged fraud. We have complied with Civil Rule 9B. In fact, in the trial court, if you read the motion, it wasn't even argued. The court just sua sponte dismissed it.
Well, counsel, coming back to the questions that the Chief and Justice Cupp put, it would seem, to the extent that you properly pled some sort of fraud or consumer sales practices and just said this was a fake tax, that ought to get you past a 12b-6. In other words, if you allege they could have charged us $80 for the room, but instead they charged us $70 and then charged us a $10 bed tax when there wasn't any bed tax and they weren't paying it to anybody, and so they misrepresented the true cost of the room. If that's how you pled this, it would seem you ought to get past a 12b-6. But if you mixed in with that a claim for charging you too much tax, your all these unknown beneficiaries of your cause of action, and it appeared that the allegation included the fact that they charged 10% when the tax was only 5, but may have actually paid 10% to the taxing authority, then it appears like you're trying to recover something from the taxing authority. And I don't think we require our judges to try and figure out what the heck you're pleading if you haven't pleaded it artfully. So that it would seem to me it all comes down to that. What did you exactly plead?
Well, we pled, I think quite quite clearly that they charged a fake non-existent tax. There was zero tax Butler County and Fairfield had. And they were collecting 6% from everybody at who knows what occupancy.
And did
rate.
You allege that they never paid it to anyone?
Yes.
All right. But did you mix in with that a claim for later years in which they charged a tax, paid a tax, and left unclear whether if your cause of action was only for taxes charged when there was a tax that were overcharged and not paid, in other words, your claim is only against Fairfield Inns, and you're not seeking anything from a taxing authority, that's one matter. But if you mixed in the taxing authority, then that gets this case into something entirely differently.
Well, our primary case and the primary facts are that for years they charged 6% off of every hotel stay every day throughout the year. And you can imagine this amounts to a lot of money that they converted to their own use fraudulently, and they knew about it. Those are the allegations. But it does also include from the time of 2003 when they did enact the tax and then they charged too much, which again goes to the fraud claim,
well,
the
deceptive. Counsel, do you divide that into those two time periods from 99 to 2003 when there was no tax, in which they alleged there was a tax and they collected a tax, and then as another cause of action, the taxing performance or activity from 2003 till 2007, and divide that out as a separate cause of action?
They are simply subsets of the class action.
I don't understand what that means.
One subset is the period from when they opened in 1999 through 2003, and then the second subset is from 2003 to 2007.
And do you say that they charged a tax from all of that period of time to which they were not entitled to charge a tax?
From 99 to 2003, they were not entitled to charge any tax.
I understand that.
And from 2003 on, they knew what the tax rate was, and they charged more, and they kept it.
And the fraud permeates from 99 to 2007, and that's the basis of your action is the fraud?
Correct. In addition to the deceptive and unconscionable act of collecting monies off of people that...
All right, say they didn't have the 99 to 2003 activity, and we're only dealing with 2003 to 2007, where they didn't charge the correct tax, nor did they do what they should have done with the tax that they did charge. Would you be before us?
Yes.
How would you get before us under those circumstances?
Because I still have a fraud and violation of the CSPA Act.
Why is that not in comport with standard and long held law that the taxing authority is then the proper entity to initiate the action against a business who doesn't tax according to the statutes? How do you get a private cause of action in circumstances like that?
It all goes to the rationale underlying each of these decisions. If you look at Parker on page 5 at the bottom, the quote is, and these are all talking about state sales tax, which we don't have here, but that's where the whole rationale used by these courts and the appellate court. It is the state's treasury that will ultimately be affected if the appellant suit for monetary damage is successful. And then they went through everything, and same thing with our appellate court. While we agree with the appellate that the extent of the prior case law deals with state tax refunds, the tax at issue would be considered an excise tax. We believe the rationale espoused by those cases is sound. Well, the rationale by Parker and by Bergmoser is not sound, because in this case, the treasury of the city of Fairfield or Butler County is not affected.
They're not affected.
From 2003 on, they never got paid anything, and they don't have a right to get paid anything. From 2003 on, the difference in tax, they were collecting more than the tax was. Obviously, before that, for those 4 years before that, obviously their treasury's not affected. They don't have any duty. The city of Fairfield, Butler, doesn't have any duty to collect any tax. They had no legislation allowing them to get any tax. There's no duty, there's no, you know, and the whole idea of a refund is, the definition of a refund is to get it back from the person who had it, or at least has a right to it.
Would the analogous situation then be if a particular county in the state assessed 8% as a sales tax, but certain stores were collecting 10% sales tax, that the action would be a private right and would not be then to the state taxing authority to collect that difference, even though the individual retailer had retained the 2% difference on sales?
I think you still could, under a fraud and a Consumer Sales Practices Act, maintain a private cause of action, but I think...
But doesn't the case authority suggest that it is a public cause of action?
Absolutely, and it should be filed in the Court of Claims, and it's a claim against the estate. And they have a mechanism and regulation for that, which we don't have here.
You've used your time, Mr. Ignazi.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fruman.
Mr. Fruman, I didn't find this case to be as interesting as Mr. Ignazi suggested. It sounds like he has a legitimate cause of action for the bills that claimed a tax when no tax existed and your client didn't pay the money to a taxing authority, or for anything that was charged over and above the actual tax that was listed as a tax. However, if he bled all that together in a pleading and the judge incorrectly granted a 12B6 and the Court of Appeals incorrectly affirmed that, isn't this case just about error correction at this point over a pleading, and shouldn't we just improv it?
Your Honor, that question actually begs another question, and that is, does Ms. Volbers Klarich, does the appellant, thank you, I apologize, does she have a claim? And the answer is absolutely unequivocally yes. She has a claim for both the taxes from 1999 to 2003 and from 2003 to 2007. But, and this is the important but, that claim is not against the business. The claim is against the taxing authority on whose behalf the taxes
even
were collected.
Even where the complaint states fraud, and the fraud part of the complaint, I've got the First Amendment complaint, hopefully that's the only one, it refers only to the fact that there is no tax, that they collected a tax that didn't exist.
Your Honor, that's not different than prior case law. The DeCour case was for a non-existent case. The Barker Furnace case was for a non-existent tax. And frankly,
the taxing authorities in those cases, did they not receive some benefit?
Not in either the DeCour carpet case or the Barker Furnace case. In both of those two cases, there was a non-existent tax.
Well, why wouldn't those cases just be wrong? I mean, it seems to me if a cause of action is alleged for fraud that you're putting on your bill, this part of your bill is for a tax that doesn't exist, and your client doesn't pay it to a taxing authority, that ought to be a legitimate cause of action, regardless of how small the amount is or whether or not this is an appropriate class action. It seems to me any cases that we might have out there that suggest you got to go after the taxing authority are just wrongly decided.
Your Honor, this is the most important point I'd like to make. It puts all of this in context, and that is, once the vendor, the business, calls it a tax, it's a tax. and it belongs to the government on whose behalf it was collected.
Well, what if it was called a federal chocolate tax?
Then, Your Honor, it would be a federal chocolate tax due to the federal government.
You don't think the federal government would just laugh you right out of the place?
No, Your Honor, because as soon as it's called a tax, because taxing is an exclusively government function, whether we're at the state level, the federal level, the municipal level, it is a governmental function. I can't charge a tax. This court can't charge a tax.
Neither can the Hampton. When the legislature, either the state, the federal, or the local, have not identified and passed legislation to establish that tax.
And when they do, and when they call it a tax, the money belongs to the government.
And I understand that, but if we're talking from 2003 to 2007, yes, I would, you know, there's a different analysis. But from 99 to 2003, they're pretty much reaching into the pocket of their guests and taking additional dollars and duping them into paying them by saying, this is going to go to the state or the local or whomever.
Well, here's the problem with this case. We have allegations which haven't been proven to be true, but what we have to accept as being true. And anyone, just like the plaintiff appellant in this case, can make the same allegations and circumvent the long-established law, the law that started in 1980 with the Decor Carpet case and continued on to the Bergmoser case in 2007. In all those cases.
Well, now you say circumvent. I doubt that the plaintiff put a gun to your head and required you to file a 12B6 motion. You're the one that pulled the trigger on that.
And the 12B6 motion was completely appropriate because of the law from 1980 to 2007, every court that has considered this issue.
So what would happen if this plaintiff had gone to Fairfield and said, I want a refund on this tax?
And what would have happened, I speculate, Your Honor, is Fairfield would have said there is no tax, and they would have sued the Hampton Inn, the same two defendants that are part of this case, for the collection of the tax. And you
know
what?
Why would they bother? We don't have this tax. We don't have the right to sue them for this tax because we never passed a tax. So on what legal theory could they sue Hampton for a tax that they never passed?
Because they are entitled to that money. Once they call it a tax, the hotel became a trustee for the government.
Are you talking pre-2003 or post-2003?
If it's a tax, it's a tax, Your Honor. I'm talking both.
But if it wasn't in place, this is what I'm having a hard time with, and I think some of my colleagues, a private citizen here, a business, cannot say, I am creating a tax, and I am going to collect that tax, and I'm going to put it in my pocket. That doesn't legitimize their activities and offer them the protection that someone who erroneously collects a tax, and it's erroneous only as to the amount, and they do it in good faith, or they do it just by virtue of mistake. This appears to be an intentional act.
It appears that way because that's the way it was pled, and that's important. They pled it as fraud. They pled it as intent. There's been no discovery. They don't really know what happened.
So therefore, why should you have a 12B6 granted on that basis?
Because the existing law is very clear. Once you call it a tax, it's a tax. It belongs to the government. And they need to go to the government. And it's the government's
so
money.
So you're saying Fairfield and Butler could pursue Hampton and collect a tax they've never authorized.
Absolutely,
and then turn
Your
it back to the plaintiffs.
Not only could they, but all the cases from 1980 to 2007 have said they've got that right. They'd win that case, Your Honor. They have an absolute 100% entitlement to whatever the tax that we collected.
Why don't you guys just
alleged
pay this directly to the plaintiffs? If you
Excuse
collected
me,
it and if you collected it and never gave it to the Fairfield and Butler, why are we here? Why didn't you settle? I guess that's an unfair question. Never mind.
Your Honor, we're here on a 12B6.
I know.
Based on allegations that they made in the complaint, which regardless of whether they're true, we have to accept to be true.
And if we accept him as true, they shouldn't have gotten a 12B6 dismissal.
Absolutely disagree with that, Your Honor.
Let me ask you, if the cases that you cited, and you do cite Decor and a case after that that says that if a vendor, in this case the inn, collects a tax from a patron, that it does so as a trustee of the taxing authority. Now we've got to look at those cases, obviously, and see whether there's some whether it's this plain fraud case, as you said. It was pleaded the way I read it, and if I've got the correct complaint in front of me, it was pleaded as just plain old fraud. It wasn't any pretense that they collected too much or anything like that in the complaint. So it seems to me that perhaps we need to review that line of cases. If it doesn't make any sense for someone who, if there is truly fraud, if a vendor or if a proprietor says, I'm going to charge you a tax when there is absolutely no tax, it doesn't seem to me that the person who is subject to that fraud, if you will, has to go to the taxing authority and have them say, well, we didn't get any tax from that because that was fraud. They never gave us any tax. So then you go through this very expensive process for a person who just stayed overnight in a hotel to get what's fair. And I'm just basing it upon allegations, obviously. We've made no conclusion here. But that doesn't seem to be a very efficient process of law, does it?
Your Honor, it does seem fair, and it seems appropriate, and it seems the appropriate thing to do given the long line of cases. And here's why. Taxation is an exclusive government function. When it's called a tax, it becomes a tax. It becomes the property of the government.
I want to stop you there. Anyone who calls a charge $15 on a bill and calls it a tax, that makes it a tax?
Absolutely. The case law is abundantly clear on that, Your
really?
Honor. Absolutely. The Decor case says it. The Barker Furnace case, Bergmauser, Parker versus Giant Eagle, they all say the same thing.
But some of those cases are cases in which there was a dispute over the amount of tax that was charged by the vendor. That's a different situation.
Some of them are. Some of them are based on non-existent cases, taxes. For instance, Decor Carpet Mills, which this court sided with authority the following year in the Geiler case, and the Barker Furnace case.
Do you know
both are non-existent taxes?
This may be asking more than you should know, but was there a pleading of fraud in those cases? Do you know?
There was, in the Bergmauser case, there was a pleading for a violation of the Ohio Consumer Sales Practices Act, which, me being a simple guy, doesn't see a whole lot of difference between that claim and a fraud claim. That's just a statutory enactment of a fraud claim in the context of a consumer. But again, and this is important, this is only a fraud claim because they say so and because they pled it as such. As the 12th District found in this case, whatever name they wanted to put on the claim, whether they call it a negligence or a breach of a statute of duty to collect or breach of contract or violation of Ohio Consumer Sales Practices Act or a violation of Ohio corrupt practices or fraud, all of which they pled, whatever name they put on it, the bottom line is still this. They want a refund of the government's money.
And you want them to go to a taxing authority. And had they done that in 99 or 2000, when the tax was being collected by Hampton, there was no agency to accept a remitter of it because they didn't have the tax. How could they have applied for a refund to a city department that doesn't exist?
Your Honor,
that's what you're telling us they should do or should have done.
I'm telling you that's what the case law establishes they should do. They should have gone to the city of Fairfield. They should have gone to Butler County. They should have said, we paid a tax that didn't exist. The county, on whose behalf.
And who at the city? The police department would do that for them or the mayor? There isn't any taxing authority. That's the problem with your argument.
But, Your Honor, what they could do at the end of the day, either as an individual plaintiff or as a class action plaintiff, is sue the government. And by the way, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that assuming my client has really done anything wrong, as is alleged, that we get off scot-free. We're going to pay. We're going to pay the government. In fact, I suspect the way it would happen is they'd go to the government, they'd sue the government, and we'd get third-partied into the case. But here's the point. If it's a tax, it's a tax, and the money belongs to the government. And this is the big problem. By alleging it as they have, they're going to allow the exception, the fraud, to swallow the rule. How is this case here different than all of the others that have existed?
I've read the other cases, and I don't know of any where the tax was levied with no authority imposing it. I mean, there are excess collection cases, as is part of this case. But are there other precedents with no tax, no sales tax ever having been imposed?
Your Honor, I'd ask you to look at the Barker Furnace case,
right,
where there was non-existent tax, and the decor
carpet. I know about.
Again, they collected a sales tax where there should not have been one. It should have been a use tax. There wasn't a tax.
Yeah, but they were collecting something that they thought was legitimate. They were collecting something that they thought, and then they tried to have a credit applied against the other tax, and they couldn't do that.
But what you just said is what's important here, what they thought was legitimate. We're here today because they alleged fraud, assuming that this is fraudulent.
Well, counsel,
should we be back to a summary instead of a 12b-6? Because we need to have some evidence to decide that question.
No, Your Honor, we don't, because the established line of cases says this isn't even the hotel's money. The money belongs to the government.
Well, the trial court dismissed the complaint because it didn't plead fraud properly.
On that, Your Honor, I would tell you I believe the trial court was probably mistaken.
Seems that there's enough pleading, but
the better approach, I thought, was that adopted by the 12th District, where they said, by whatever name you want to call this claim, it's a claim for the recovery of taxes which belong to the government. And because that's the government's money, because it's an exclusive government function, you have to sue the government for it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Fruman. Mr. Ignazi, used all your time. Take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, the Parker case, and all of these cases that we've been talking about deal with state sales tax, where there's a regulatory framework, the Ohio Administrative Code, and everything's outlined. That is not these. These are excise taxes. They are different. The Bergmoser case did not have Consumer Sales Practices Act, but it did have a fraud claim in it. And the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in 2008 on appeal acknowledged that the Administrative Code section's language that provided a remedy to request a refund did not bar the plaintiff for the fraud claim. But the bottom line is, I think the way espoused by the appellate court and the defendants puts an undue and unfair burden on the municipalities and counties of this state. I can't imagine going to Butler County or Fairfield and saying, give me all this money on behalf of all these patrons that they took and that they have. It underlines or is completely contrary to the soundness of the decisions in Parker and that, even the appellate court in this case.
Well, if you file the trustee theory, then I guess the taxing authority says to Hampton Inn, you've been collecting what you say is a tax for our benefit. You haven't given it to us, and so even though we haven't authorized the tax by ordinance, or whatever, we want the money you've improperly taken from your customers, and we'll put it into some fund, and then the customer comes and says, that's my money. Seems like a pretty archaic way to do it, but.
Not to mention there's no mechanism, no form to even request a refund from the city or the county.
Do you want to comment at all on Judge Oney's dismissal of your fraud claim on the lack of proper?
I didn't understand it.
Okay. Thank you. Your time. Thank you. Case is submitted. You may be advised of our opinion.